Thanks, Rob. It's the download here, 720 WGN. It's time to reload the news. Biggest stories, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? Lots to choose from, and we've got the choosers in studio. Lauren Cohn, a longtime Chicago journalist, both radio, television. Lauren, good to see you.
Good to be here.
And Jeff Cohen, an investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hello, sir.
Regulars here to the Reload segment. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to call in and give us your choices for winners, losers, biggest story, all that jazz. We'll start tonight with biggest stories. This was a week where there was a lot of big stories. And it really came down to two big ones, maybe three, because what kills me is that the government shutdown was this week. If you think about it, that was Saturday that happened, Friday into Saturday, and it was resolved on Monday. That counts as this week. That blows my mind.
That was sort of a win for Republicans, right?
Because
they didn't have a government shutdown for 24 hours.
Right, exactly. But it always blows my mind when you get to Friday. Like, what are we going to talk about? What about that ancient thing from 6 months ago? Oh, no, that was Monday.
Yeah, the women's marches were this week.
All those stories are big stories, but the two that really came on this week, and we'll talk about now, the Russia investigation, of course. But first, let's start with Larry Nassar, the sentencing, and USA Gymnastics, Michigan State University. That's my choice, all of our choices, for biggest story of the week.
You know, it was so heartbreaking to listen to all the girls and women that came forward, and, you know, more than 100.
And 156.
Just unbelievable. I mean, it was heart-wrenching, and, you know, right on with the judge, you know, you're never going to be out of a jail cell again. But the fact that this was able to go on for so long, and, you know, you see the board members that, you know, stepped down today, and anyone involved in that should face criminal charges. They really should.
If there is, I mean, that's going to be the issue. If there's any evidence that they covered up or didn't act.
Well, there are resignations at Michigan State as well in the past couple of days with, allegations that questions were raised there, you know, back into the 90s.
It's amazing to me that kind of thing can happen in 2018, and I was listening to a lawyer talk about it, and their thought was, listen, this is a textbook case of caring more about the integrity, or not even the integrity, but the health and profitability of a sport than the athletes that play that sport.
And some of these, you know, young girls came forward, you know, parents were told, and yet nothing was done to protect these girls. And then you have someone like Allie Riesman, who comes out, but she's an Olympian, and it kind of shows you, like, it took the Me Too movement had to be Hollywood, people who had made it, because obviously it was going on. We knew it's going on in corporations everywhere. And
right.
Until you have people who have money behind them or power behind them where they can't be touched is when they can come out and speak. It's when you don't that you feel like you can't say anything.
It's amazing.
And,
you
know, also, it was a bit of a win for investigative journalism. The Indy Star is getting a lot of credit now for breaking that story.
Right.
The prosecutor in the hearing actually even credited, you know, newspaper reporting for helping to push that over. So,
side stories in this, of course, Michigan State and USA Gymnastics. I mean, they're going to do everything they can to distance themselves. They want the Olympic Committee wants resignations. They got it today. Michigan State wants resignations. They got it. But that's not good enough. We already saw in the scandals that were at Penn State that it was resignations and people went to jail and there were billions, almost billions of dollars in fines. And so it feels like Michigan State is teetering close and may have already crossed over into Penn State territory.
It's tarnished their image. There's no question about it. They better get some pretty good PR going. And there's probably going to be so many more stories and levels that we come out and hear about things. This has legs. This has legs, for sure.
The other story that came out, and you talked about the judge, but the judge became, I thought, unbelievable line where it says, I just signed your death warrant. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
That's crazy for a judge to say. But, I mean, obviously, and I've heard some people say that they thought she was grandstanding, that she knew the cameras were on her. But that was intense what she was saying in the courtroom.
Yeah, as a long time, your reporter's covered a lot of court hearings. That kind of goes above and beyond, I think, anything that I heard in my years in court. And, you know, you have to be careful as a judge, too, creating appeal issues. You know, if he decides to appeal the sentence is too harsh, you know, that becomes Exhibit A, that kind of a comment.
So. Yeah, and then, but also, she also became a rallying cry with one of the statements that she made, where she said, get it out now in this sentence hearing and don't let it stay with you. Go do amazing things. That was her message to the girls and the women that were telling their stories. So she really became almost a folk hero, but she's a judge.
Right. I mean, some could call it unprofessional. And I think we see more of these theatrics in courtrooms today than we ever did before. And I think because it was so emotional, I mean, think about it, if you're the judge or anyone in that courtroom listening to the emotions of these young women, you can't help yourself. We know that's not her role. But I also think that, for these young girls, Nassar's going to jail, but their lives are changed forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't get erased just because he goes to prison.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this story, as you said, has legs, and it will be probably the biggest story for a couple weeks to come. Jeff, let's talk about the other big story, the Russia investigation, and really surrounding the fight between the president, Donald Trump, and the FBI. Secret texts or secret societies and lost texts and all this happened this week. It really put a spotlight. And now the latest news that the president asked his counsel if he could fire Robert Mueller, really playing into this continuing idea that the president and the administration is guilty of obstruction of justice.
Yeah, I think unlike when, Manafort was indicted and things like that we've seen recently, this was a week where it kind of moved forward in smaller pieces. But all of it, sort of suggested that there's continued momentum there. I mean, this week we had Donald Trump say that he would, be willing to testify under oath in the Mueller investigation. How truthful that is, it's one thing to just say it.
I mean, I'm a cool president. I'm cool. My lawyers, they may not let me, but I'm cool. I'm a cool guy.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
I'll do anything. Sure. But my lawyers, I'm not sure. I mean, that's so ridiculous.
Let's pull up a chair right now. Right. And you had news that Jeff Sessions has been interviewed in recent weeks. And then, of course, just in the last 24 hours or so, news broke that Trump in June actually made some attempt to fire Mueller, and the White House counsel indicated he would quit if that occurred, and that it didn't happen. So you have to remember last summer how much of the talk centered on whether Trump might actually try to pull that. And, all of his spokespeople were out there saying, no,
he would never do that. And now the rumor is that he did.
Yeah, of course.
All right, Lauren, the question I have is, I mean, I'm trying to keep partisan views out of this, because there's a lot of both sides are spinning. There's a memo that Devin Nunes has. There's texts in the FBI, political bias. But are we in Watergate territory? I keep seeing parallels to how that all kind of played out before all of the convictions, arrests, and resignations came down.
Well, we haven't heard of there yet. I mean, we're waiting to see, is this obstruction of justice? Is this collusion? How is it going to be? How are you going to spin it? First of all, this is a guy. We have to remember, when we think of presidents, you have to think of this president's personality. This is a guy who made a career on television of telling people, you're fired.
Right.
So it's very possible you've got a president who's walking around going, can I fire him? Should I fire him? We don't know. We don't know what happened. And if McGahn becomes the hero here because he said, wait a minute, the optics are going to be really bad after what happened with Comey, if you fire him, right? So Trump maybe nodded his head and said, okay, I can't fire him. I mean, we don't know. And so what's the there?
Right.
And that's what we're waiting to find.
And
I think
that seems
so much,
plausible. What you just said is plausible. It's plausible. And but I think a lot of the American people, at least people on the left, The concern is that the president doesn't know how to do his job. And what I mean is, there's a lot of policy procedures and laws and regulations that go along with being the president of the United States, and he flaunts it. He doesn't care. He flips his nose to it. He just is like, could I fire this guy? And by even asking that, it's obstruction of justice.
Yeah, and that's going to be part of the question, especially, through the Comey firing and all the other issues, is how much is him being Trump and just talking out loud and not thinking things through, number one, and when does that cross into provable obstruction? And I think the other issue, we were talking about this before we came on, is a lot of the speculation is that Mueller, even if he finds for obstruction, will probably follow the Ken Starr model, won't indict, and will just take his findings to Congress. And then what happens? I mean, it's up to the Senate to actually remove him by a margin that they're never going to have in terms of Republican versus Democrats. So we could get to the end of this, have a finding, and still not have anything.
It's going to play out for politics. It's going to play out for the midterms, which Jeff and I were already talking about. So you have to look at it as, was there a there? Was there collusion, obstruction of justice? Is President Trump going to say, hey, I was under attack, I was just fighting back, which he's done before? And we won't know. And so this is going to go on and on and on. And you know, we in the media, we read and we go through all of this. I don't know that the general public is so well-versed on the Russia story.
Yeah.
You know, way back when it was sexy when, you know, there was all this intrigue and we were trying to figure this out. And now it's been a year and of him as the president. So
I read a great story today and I forgot who did it. It might have been Slate. I can't remember. Just talking about, you get to the point where what's a coincidence and what is actually not collusion, but this idea that one of the reasons the president, President Nixon, went down in Watergate was because he had instructed his staff to lie, and they got that on tape, and it was Nixon on tape, and then the at that time the special prosecutor who was sympathetic to Nixon was actually they thought was on his side. Heard that tape and said, "What? That's egregious. You can't do that." And that's what started it. And so the question that still is at the heart here is, did the president in any form actually instruct the people who are all coming out and either pleading or possibly having their stories unchecked, have they been told to lie?
And remember, this is a guy without a filter. This is a guy who is not, you know, a polished politician who knows. He just says what's on his mind at the time, or he tweets about it, and sometimes he falls back. But, you know, we just don't know.
Yeah. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohn in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll start the winners and losers. Sound good? It's the Reload on the Download. Stay with us. It's Download here, 720 WGN. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohn in studio. We are reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in on what we're talking about, the biggest stories of the week, we're moving on to the winners and losers now. Jeff, why don't we start with you? You had in the winners category, both had in the winners category, the women's marches. And this was something that came out, the crowds, this was on Saturday, this counts as this week, and the crowds were bigger than the year before. This was a big moment for voters to hit the streets to celebrate or protest the one-year anniversary of Trump.
Yeah, it was huge crowds. I mean, you rarely see a movement like that. So, you know, kudos to all the women that came out there, whether they were walking because they were anti-Trump or in support of Me Too. It was just a statement that, you know, and I think what all this has done, whatever side of the politics you're on when it comes to the president, it says that I think more people are engaged in the process. More people may run for office, it's inspiring women to maybe run for office or have a bigger voice or maybe more people to go to the polls just to see something that big.
Yeah,
I think whatever, you know, political side people fall on and whatever you think of the, you know, the resist movement, and the last weekend proved that it's definitely still there.
Right.
It's not like a year has, you know, pushed any of the momentum back from that. And I think that just having that kind of a public face on it again, I think just really stresses to people all the way up to the president that there's a real groundswell of opposition to a lot of what he's doing.
It is right now considered to be opposition. Does the movement, as it grows and the crowds get bigger each time they do it, does it affect policy change? Does it start to soften the president's view on some of the issues that are being protested?
Well, I mean, part of the whole Me Too movement was taking a look at what's in the Oval Office and, you know, accusing the president of, you know, being a sexual harasser as well and saying inappropriate comments. You know, why on the tape did Billy Bush lose his job? But, you know, President Trump went all the way to the Oval Office. And so I think that was part of the statement that was being made as part of the, you know, there's always things, how you feel about immigration or how you feel about healthcare, how you feel about the economy. But I think the Me Too movement that has gone, you know, after Harvey Weinstein and Roger Ailes sort of pushed more women into the streets and saying, well, what about the Oval Office? And I think that is that going to change policy or change anything in Washington? Doubtful.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think that, you know, it's pretty widely known that this is the guy that was elected. He hasn't changed a whole lot in the last year or so.
Yeah.
So I think that, and even among, you know, you would look at maybe his evangelical base and think, well, when does things like Stormy Daniels start to wear him down? And there's not really much of a sign of that either. Is, you know, their leadership in that group this week saying they were giving him a mulligan on that one and really on a lot in his personal life, just because they really only care about the black and white of, you know, what he can do for them in terms of nominating Supreme Court justices that align with their views and that sort of thing. They really only care about that
social issues,
meets the road versus his own personal shortcomings.
It's really hard not to. I mean, when you say that, it's perfect. I mean, the hypocrisy of all politics, both sides, to think that the social uproar over Monica Lewinsky and President Clinton, and to where we're at now, and now it's not a social uproar because that, you know, we want to get our. I mean, well, you really could put a costume and you would do a game show. Is it a Republican or a Democrat?
I think the whole country has shifted, and I think Trump has helped to shift it. And the line that they always use is that we did not elect him pastor of the United States of America.
Oh, interesting.
And so they really only care about the policy.
Wow. All right. The other winner, before we take a break and continue with the reload, Tammy Duckworth. Tammy Duckworth announcing this week that she's pregnant, and she would be the first senator to give birth while in office.
Yeah, a lot of firsts for her. First Asian American woman to be elected to Congress, first disabled woman to win from a state, you know, now this. I mean, really inspiring to a lot of Americans, a lot of women.
It's pretty interesting, that stat, that this would be the first woman or first senator to give birth. You're like, that's a head scratcher.
I had to read that headline twice.
There are a lot of things, and listeners helped me when I was filling in this week, that they're like, well, there's an age requirement, and the norm of what a senator comes in is usually over 50 years old. So maybe there is some of that, but it's also starkly points out that it has been a male-dominated field to represent your state or otherwise in the political field.
Right, and she's, what is she, 49 as well, yeah. Which is, you know, maybe on the you know, farther end of the spectrum for that. But right, it was a nice moment.
Jeff Cohn, Lauren Cohn in studio. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohn, got it.
It's like an accounting/law firm.
You guys can. We'll shoot our commercial during the news for the for TV. Lauren and Jeff in studio, 312-981-7200. We come back. We'll continue with the winners and also get to the losers. Stay with us. It's a download here, 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Let's keep going with the winners. We had Tammy Duckworth. You know, I wanted to say that I don't think we say this enough. I had on my list Mitch McConnell, who I believe is a winner now and a loser later. in a way that, you know, this week was the government shutdown, and I feel like if you were going to go,
you blinked, you missed it.
Yeah, exactly. But if you were going to go and say there was a political winner, which was all about, it was a stare down. The Republicans and Mitch McConnell came out as winners. Now,
see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah, the problem is that there's an asterisk saying that if he goes back on his word about immigration, everybody knows about it. But I give him. I also say that. I have to say that I thought the tax cuts, I think that the continuing that companies are coming out, I think it was Starbucks came out this week, there were a couple others that came out who were giving bonuses to their employees and continuing that trend of saying because there's tax cuts, we are, you know, trying to give our employees money. That's a winner for Trump. There's a lot of categories for losers as well when it comes to the FBI and other things. But I thought in that case, he continues to win on the narrative about the tax cuts.
Except for you're going to have to check your own balance sheet. You know, I went through this with my accountant to figure out the taxes. Like, is this really going to help me or hurt me? And it's kind of, for me, it's breaking sort of me even this year. And who knows what it's going to be in 2 years. So I said, all right, it's not so bad. It's not so great when you break it down. But I think everybody has to do the math on that one. Because I think more people are going to see that this isn't something that was great for the rich. A lot of wealthy people are going to be hit hard on this,
and I also would say that's interesting, and I'm glad you said that, because there is this feeling too that if you do break even, it's a loss, because it has been pitched so hard as a tax cut. I'm giving you money back, but with that, with the deductions missing and if you just break even and it's the exact same as it was last year, it's a loss for Trump.
Yeah, and I did the math, so yeah. I wasn't like, oh, it's I was hurt, but I wasn't helped. Am I getting $2,000 or $4,000 in my pocket? Now give me next year, and we'll see.
There's a lot of calculators out there, and I think I got a different answer every time I try.
you know, speaking of elections, and we're going to get to the governor's race, which is heating up. Well, also this week, when we talk about 2019 and the mayor's race, Paul Vallis's name comes up, an old name here in Chicago politics. Ran CPS, came in on that big takeover with Mayor Daley in the mid-90s, but was stepped down as president of Chicago State University to essentially get ready to run for mayor.
Lots of signs. Yeah, I had him in the winter column this week just because he got a lot of press that wasn't overly negative, and in the city's sort of continuing search for a possible viable candidate to challenge the mayor, You know, he may be as close as we have right now. You know, starting with the cast column a few days ago, that kind of put him out there. There was news reports that he just recently moved to Lincoln Park, so he'll be just in under the one-year requirement for residency, which, you know, Rahm knows a lot about from 8 years ago or 7 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, he's certainly rattling the chains and looks like he might actually do it. And he does have a lot of baggage of his own, you know, especially related to schools, and he would certainly be opposed by the CTU. And he has ties to the consultant who went down with Barbara Bird Bennett in that scandal. So he would have some work to do. You know, the Tribune, I can just, you know, plug us. We just put up an analysis piece this evening. We posted it by Bill Ruthart, John Byrne, and Patrick O'Connell, which kind of weighs his experience and liabilities, and people can go read that and kind of, sort of like an early examination of what he would be like.
I feel like he just can't help himself. It's sort of like, you know, former Governor Quinn. I got to have my name out there. I got to be in the spot. I got to do something. Why? I think it's time, Paul, you know, step aside. It's the same thing, you know, with Quinn running for attorney general. Hillary Clinton, get over it. Just come on, you know. And yeah. Paul's a likable guy. We've all interviewed him, and he's one of those runaway trains. When you interview him, you can't get a soundbite out of him because he can't stop talking. But he's a nice, likable guy. Yeah. So he has that. But he has not been successful with CPS. He failed miserably in Philadelphia, and I was in Philadelphia at the time. High hopes for Paul Vallis, likable guy, was on the playground if a kid got shot. He was there, but he mismanaged the funds. He expanded too big. He, considering our budget crisis and the way, you know, things are mismanaged, yeah. You know. Well, so
he had a fan base when he ran against Blagojevich for governor.
He did run in the Democratic primary, right?
But that, you mean, I think he's a different candidate.
That's all we have to run. I mean, obviously he's been in the private sector, and he's also been in other positions of education, but that's what we know him from, running as a candidate for statewide office. He didn't do well. Mm-hmm. He may have had fans, yeah. But he didn't do well. He lost and kind of flamed out, and that's the lasting taste in your mouth about Paul Vallis.
Yeah, and he's a mixed bag on schools, which we just mentioned, and that's going to be one of the real hot buttons.
But where is the charisma? Where is the candidate that we want that's going to go up? You're going to have possibly Gary McCarthy. So who's going to get into this that's going to beat Rahm Emanuel? I mean, who's the person?
Yeah.
Where are you? Run for office. I mean, are you listening?
Yeah,
you're out there.
There's something to be said about that. I mean, we talked about this last week on The Reload about whether or not Chicago is a progressive town. Can it be like San Francisco and Seattle? The mayor seems to tout that when he goes on Colbert and other places, but the politics seem to be missing, meaning there's not a political candidate that's stepping forward to represent progressives in the city. And you see up and down Chicago right now, it's a very interesting dichotomy. You have cranes all over the place and talks of Tribune Tower skyscrapers and development downtown.
And then you have lots of people without jobs on the south side. You have, you know, people migrating out because it's become unaffordable.
Mass
you have
exodus, right.
Homeless people in, you know, River West, two blocks from me. They've been putting their tents up. You know, they
not
did
to
that
mention violence tense. Numbers at the highest we've seen in decades.
You know, the city's reputation is blue, but the real color of politics here is green. And that's exactly what we're talking about here.
You've been sitting on that.
He was waiting.
Right. Let me turn the page for the next one. But yeah, he's a mayor of big business. That's been one of the criticisms of him is, you know, mayor 1% and whatnot. But
and that's why you're not going to get a millionaire big business candidate to come in and run against him, because he already is one.
Yeah, he's got a giant war chest, and I think that's where he's going to have work to do. I mean, we talked about this, how the city center looks great and there are cranes everywhere, but the neighborhoods are emptying out, and he's got a lot of work to do in minority communities, and it could be interesting if
they just keep raising our taxes to pay down the pension.
This is going to be an interesting year, because we've been talking about on this program that the huge property tax increase that was last year, there's another one slated for this year and another one coming down the pipe. The point being that with the new tax reforms out of Washington, a lot of those taxes cannot be deducted. It may change the political strategy for the mayor on how he raises money to pay for everything.
Well, and we lost the salt tax, right? So we're going to suffer on that, you know?
Right, that's the point. All right, so that's the winners. You also had the Guggenheim. That's the winners. I
love
that.
This story. First of all, I didn't know that a sitting president could call up the Guggenheim and say, you know what, I would like that painting in the Oval Office while I'm here. I didn't know. And I guess apparently other presidents have called up, you know, and asked for great pieces of art. And, well, they're the president, so sure, we'll lend it to you. But the Guggenheim said no on Van Gogh. I don't know why they did. And they offered this curator,
the gold toilet,
who's been very vocal anti-Trump, then offers the golden toilet. He is that an insult,
it is
guys?
An insult. I think it is. Yeah, I don't know if I enjoy the art curator throwing some
shade, a little disrespectful
some shade at the
to the president.
I agree.
Of the
I think that's disrespectful. All right, losers coming up here. Let's start with I just mentioned you have on the list Tribune Tower.
Yeah, and we've all had experience working in this building, and especially for the newspaper reporters who work here, I think it's we've got a sad period coming up where we're going to be moving out of here. There was the announcement this week of a giant skyscraper going back in the lot mm-hmm. where we park our pool cars, as a matter of fact, in that exact area. but yeah, it's going to be hard to imagine this as a condo building. You know, we walk through the lobby every day, which is famous for its etchings of sayings about press freedom and so forth. And I was liking that a little bit to like the Fighting Irish running out of the tunnel and slapping their play like a champion today.
Right.
Sign you walking, you can't help but kind of get your game face.
You're inspired
on.
Walking into this building.
So I don't know if that's going to be the same at more of a traditional office space, but so I just it's sad for I think a lot of people here.
It is sad because it's a landmark.
Yeah. And we'll be out of here. So, and hopefully they will have a really good tchotchke jewelry store in the studio. Something maybe like a
Will people be able to see you when they walk by, Justin? Are you going to be like in down
not,
in the basement
yeah,
somewhere?
I'm not
some
going
building?
With the radio. I'm going to stay with the tchotchke store. I'm employed with the tchotchke store.
It could,
could
be somebody's hot tub complex.
right. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. Losers 312-981-7200. Stay with us, Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio. Let's quickly just go to some of the callers are calling. It's unlikely that 773 saying it's unlikely that Trump's mind will be changed by the Women's March. If the marchers organize ongoing pickets of their legislators' offices, both before and after the midterms, that might affect their thinking. Let's go to Ed. Ed and Joliet. Hey, Ed, what are you thinking? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Ed.
Loyal Ed and Joliet. I have a comment regarding Trump. I'm a Trump supporter, but Trump is not very nice to the seniors. Do you know that this is the first year in years that I am getting less in my Social Security, even though they say you get a 2% cost of living? That's number one. And I don't know why they should do that. When they say 2% cost of living, then you should get 2% cost of living. And this is the first time that I have my Social Security is less than it has been in years.
Hmm.
And then the second point I want to make is, why is Trump not doing something with these banks to give the people who don't have the money in the stock market but want to put some money in savings, why can't they get any interest on their money when everything else is going so good?
Well, you're spending the money, and that means that companies and corporations aren't making it. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. There's something to be said. I went down the rabbit hole on the solar energy tariffs, and we'll get to that because that is an interesting play about you could put conspiracy theories together, and we'll talk about that coming up. But the conspiracy theory that I've kind of latched onto, I think it's really interesting. I had a friend who pointed this out, that a tax cut means there's more money in your pocket, and then the tariff comes along, and essentially you're going to start seeing goods go up. Meaning that it's not when the tariff comes along, the washing machines and solar energy and everything else that's going to go into balancing the trade means that anything that's coming from overseas is just the costs are going to be pushed on the consumers.
It's not like, they won't afford them.
Yeah,
and
so now we got to pay $800, and then you're like, but now you're going
to
pay $800 instead of $600, but now we got the money.
Well, in respect to the caller, in terms of there is no place you can put your money to earn interest anymore. It sits in the bank. There isn't the days of Vanguard or places like GE that used to. If you worked for NBC and GE, you could actually put your money into a fund that was earning interest. So if you're not riding the wave of Wall Street, where do you put your money? And that's bank.
And you
control.
Saw Bank of America this week in the loser category taking away checking accounts for people who have under 1500 limits or under direct deposits of $250. Whatever it was, there used to be a free checking account, and they are saying that's no longer being offered.
And that is where the disparity is. It's a bit of a different picture on the ground than it is, when you talk about the Dow and Trump's constantly trumpeting that, it just the Dow does not equate to the economy. There's a whole
On the question of the solar panels, though, I've heard economists on both sides of this.
Yeah,
So the whole idea. I mean, most people that I've talked to today said, "Oh, it's a terrible idea," because just like you said, you know, this new washer dryer is going to cost me so much money that I'm not going to buy it, which means they're not going to have as much sales, and then people are going to get laid off. But yet, it was these corporations, not Trump, that started this whole "we need to be competitive with
absolutely.
The foreign market."
Yeah, and absolutely, and I have to say, and we'll get into it. We'll table that because I truly see both sides. And there's also something in there, and I understand the theory that if tariffs are getting in the way of the bottom line of a Samsung or any of these companies that might be in Japan or China, yeah, moving to America, setting up shop here and offering jobs for Americans is a way to get around that. So I can see that as a job producer, but it doesn't always work that way. As a matter of fact, many economists say it never works that way. Anyway, we'll talk about that. But we have about 4 or 5 minutes here, and I want to get into the Illinois governor's race because I had that in Winners and Losers. There were debates this week. They were in front of the editorial boards of the newspaper. You started to see a clear picture of where everybody was at. And essentially where they're at is that they just aren't the other candidates. I'm not even sure what any of these candidates stand for, except they stand against the other candidates.
Well, and that's the easy play, right? So when Governor Rana ran against Quinn, he didn't have to say, "Here's my plan for the economy." He just had to say, "Here's what Quinn didn't do. Here's where we're at." And that's what's going on now. It's just the mudslinging of this guy, that guy, as opposed to, "Here's my plan." And we as voters and educated, you know, Americans in any race, we want to know, well, how are you going to help me?
Now more than ever.
How are you going to help me?
We just had 4 years of total discord. I mean, that was the worst 4 years of Illinois politics in its history. I mean, we had no budgets balanced.
It should be a hard time to be able to kind of come up with a concrete plan that's better than what we've just seen.
But it's easier for them just to throw some of the other guy under the bus.
It's super annoying. And it's annoying that I have yet to hear an articulate plan from any of the candidates on either side of the aisle about how they're going to deal with pension reform and how they're going to deal with balancing the budget every single year. And I don't know how the people at the Trib, Sun Times, other places are not holding their feet to the fire to say, "Listen, I know you don't like Kennedy, or I know you want to not say something nice about Pritzker. I know that Rauner is attacking Democrats in his primary. Enough. What are you going to do this time around that's different than the last, or what are you going to do to replace the sitting governor?" That's what we need to know right now as voters, because we cannot have another 4 years of what just happened.
Well, and it's easier just to say, you know, "I have X amount of money and I can throw you under the bus for this," and it's the battle of the billionaires, and it just takes cover over everything else.
And it's kind of a time period where I think everybody's trying to get their footing still. And you're right, the Rauner kind of wading into the Democratic primary is a little bit unusual, so you have kind of a lot of sniping still at this stage.
Right.
We were talking before, you know, during the break about, you know, it seems like JB's been paying more attention to BIS lately than Kennedy.
Especially in that debate. Right.
Sure. And is that just a strategy to kind of cut Kennedy out of the talking points because he's the bigger threat?
There was an editorial today in the Tribune about calling Kennedy a goofball. Essentially saying Mr. Camelot is now Mr. Goofalot or whatever it was. It was a good line. But, I mean, saying he's just not taking this seriously. He doesn't seem to have it. And I have to say, watching the commercials, the Rauner commercial on JB on the Blagojevich tapes just makes you go, I'm turning this off until March. The one commercial that I have a little bias because Daniel Biss has been on my show a lot, but his commercial showing his family taking milk out of the fridge and getting ready for school, that's something I haven't seen out of Illinois politics. Instead, I see billionaires at factories with hard hats on going, or riding Harleys going, "I'm just like you," where Daniel's got that kind of vibe where he goes, "Is us." And that's, and to me, I wonder if that's going to play. I don't know if he's got the money or the mission or the look or the feel or whatever it might be to be governor, but he definitely has found his footing as the anti-millionaire candidate.
Right, and he's upsetting the apple cart between Kennedy and Pritzker because he's, you know, trying to pull one from the other, right? So it's not going to be Kennedy, it'll be me. But don't count out Jeannie Ives here. You know, we keep talking about the fellas, but let's talk about Jeannie Ives. I mean, she's coming out strong. She doesn't have the money that Rauner has.
And is Rauner doing the same thing strategy-wise by not talking about her and talking about Pritzker instead?
Yeah, I think he's you sort of look more viable if you attack a candidate who's coming down the road. You know, you're sort of like just sloughing off the immediate challenger and kind of painting them as not being a threat to you.
I mean, he's got money, but he's upset a lot of his base, you know, flipping on Sanctuary Cities and HB 40. And Jeannie Ives is coming out strong and calling him on the carpet and calling him
will
on the carpet
debate?
In terms of taxes.
Will Rauner and Ives
he
debate?
Said no, he won't debate
no,
her.
Huh.
And why?
Well, that's another tactic. because you don't let her in the conversation.
Yeah, it's working, and you're absolutely right. It's working in the way that the conversation's about Pritzker and Blagojevich now.
You know, the only person I've heard mention that name is you. I mean, right? in the last few days.
And you know what? Let's take a break because I want to get to the news. But the other issue right there as well is coming up, I think it's the week after next, is the budget address that Governor Rauner has in Springfield. That'll be very interesting because he's already talked about wanting to roll back the income tax hike and get us right back into the budget stuff that's been going on for the last 4 years. Lauren Cohen, Jeff Cohen, we are reloading this week's news on the download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It is the download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Chicago journalist Lauren Cohen, Chicago journalist Jeff Cohen in studio tonight, reloading this week's news. We have moved on to overreported and underreported. Then we'll get to rabbit hole and which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. Let's start with overreported. I'll start. Secret society. Right? That could be one of the most ridiculous stories of all time. The fact that it came out and we're like, is that people are taking this seriously? And I had a couple people, you know, on filling in for Roe. We talked to ABC News reporters and asked the question, is Washington, like the insiders, consultants, media, punditries, are people taking this seriously? Like, no, everyone knows this is a bit. And it turned out to be a bit. And I don't understand how we got all wrapped up in that for 24 hours. And it turned out to be a joke.
Fake news.
Yeah.
It went away completely once the context was released this week. Yeah. Just like flipping a switch, gone.
It did not bode well from the distinguished senator from Wisconsin, I'll tell you that. The other overreported story when it comes to that, and I had it on the list, and it's amazing because you've already mentioned it, Jeff, is Stormy Daniels. The idea of now we have to follow where she's at, what strip club she's going to, and what tour she's on, and this, that, and the other. It's all right. All right, media. You know what? I think we've learned that society doesn't care.
Well,
so move on.
It hasn't maxed out yet either because she's going to be on Kimmel, I think, on Tuesday. So you got to...
Now we have to watch.
You got to steal yourself for that.
I'll pass. I'll wait for it to show up for Facebook's algorithms.
Right.
I'm only going to show your friends and family. I guarantee I'll wake up on whatever morning and I'll open up Facebook and it'll be like, your friends and family love Jimmy Kimmel.
But that's part of the problem is it's all on social media.
Yeah.
I think if social media wasn't there,
I'd be okay with that.
It is crazy, however, that you can have a story like the current president, you know, paid off a porn star to not talk about their affair, and people are like, whatever.
It's unbelievable.
What's
right?
next?
Sure.
And then I guess that plays into another overreported I had was just Melania Trump not going to Davos, which, all right, you know, there is absolutely no news in that. There's no source. There's nothing. The idea of watching news organizations speculate on how angry Melania Trump is, I don't know anything about how angry she is. Maybe she doesn't want to go to Switzerland.
I think as a first lady, people aren't paying attention to Melania Trump. Not certainly the way they paid attention to what Michelle Obama was doing or what the Obama girls were doing. They're just not. They're more interested in what Jared Kushner said behind a wall, in the room where it happened.
And is she that angry? Did she wake up on Tuesday and say, wow, this guy's actually a jerk? I'm not going to switch.
Or first time she'd heard about it, right?
Right. I don't think so.
All right. So the other overreported story, Lauren, you and I both talking about this doomsday clock.
Is there not a doomsday scenario?
This is the clock that scientists, atomic scientists, isn't it the whole idea that if it hits midnight, it's nuclear annihilation? And right now they put it 2 minutes, closest it's ever been. Yeah, and my answer to that is, really? You didn't know that? Everybody knows that. We don't need a clock to tell us that we're on the brink of nuclear annihilation.
Sure, I think wasn't it started as kind of a public awareness situation? I mean, obviously, in the Cold War, everybody was cognizant of it, but just to kind of put the risk factor into a demonstrable object. But when you have things like the false alarm in Hawaii and people are putting their children in the sewers because they think North Korea is attacking, I don't think we need the doomsday clock.
We don't need the doomsday clock. We've got Twitter.
Exactly. What happened in Hawaii, though, that was just unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy?
And now the person who was allegedly responsible is not talking.
Why?
Why exactly?
I saw that
today, right before I came over here, and I'm like, why wouldn't you talk?
They said that he was refusing to cooperate.
I don't know.
What does that
I
mean?
Say,
I mean, I'm sure
Twitter,
he feels bad.
But what does that mean? I mean, I don't understand how you cannot. You're a government employee that made a mistake on your job. If somebody comes and asks you, I refuse to cooperate with that.
I don't know the answer, but speaking of Twitter, I did like the GIF this week, which was it showed like a computer screen and a cursor, you know, arrow moving over, and one button was alert and one was don't alert, and he hovers over don't alert and a pop-up ad appears and moves alert into this, and he, as he clicks it,
that's what happened.
That
that's
must be
what
it.
Happened.
Okay.
All right.
Now I understand.
All right. Let's keep going. The other overreported story, the serial stowaway, that's on the list. All right. Great. Good. So she did it again. That's such an interesting story. Much to do about absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like the 85th time that that's happened, and we only get the bare sort of surfacey reports. I would read it if they would explain how you do that, because I've been on enough flights recently.
So
it's
just not fake news. It's real news.
I just don't see how that's possible.
How do you, right. Especially at Heathrow.
Yeah, especially anywhere. It's like we said, it's always a full flight.
Yeah.
Even if you manage to get on the plane past the person taking tickets at the thing.
Yeah.
Are you in someone's seat? Were you hiding in the overhead compartment? I don't get it.
Yeah. There's a lot. You're absolutely right. And it's the same story every time where a judge went, gee, Sternly, stay away from the airport. Stay away. Because there is a part where you're like, well, okay, I guess you could put her in jail for it. But airline jail? I don't know. I'm done with that story. Let's do underreported. You have the story. I saw the story last week. I put this as my which story will be remembered story. Cape Town, South Africa, facing prospect of being without water shortly. Jeff, this is alarming.
Yeah, and I haven't really seen it even that much in American media. I think I saw it was the Daily Mail or somewhere. But yeah, apparently as of April 12th is now the date that they're calling day zero there, where they're going to be mostly without water. And the government's already asking people to take 90-second showers and take the runoff water from the shower and use that to flush the toilet. I mean, it's already like they're in a bad way there. And it's related to, you know, rapid urbanization there, and there's a climate change element. It's just, you know, it's being billed as
the first
world city. It's, yeah, it's 4 million people at risk. That's going to go dry. So
it's amazing how we take things like that for granted. You know, water.
It's a terrible story. It's to have this in the underreported category. Also, says a lot about us right now that all the stories we've talked about tonight. This is you're absolutely right. It's underreported. April 12th. We're not talking in 2028.
And they keep moving it up, too, right? April 12th.
Jeez. All right, another underreported story you have, Lauren. CPS gets washing machines? What is this?
Well, this was actually a great story. I saw that the Sun-Times. Sorry, Jeff, that the Sun-Times did it. But
yeah, Jeff,
it really,
we're asleep at the wheel.
I'm out of here.
I know. It kind of broke my heart to see that. I mean, great that CPS was getting donated washing machines and dryers, but the fact that it's because these kids are coming to school every day in the same clothes because they have no place to wash their clothes. And so they have to bring the washers and dryers into the school so the kids can, and it's, where are the parents in all this? And then there were these stories about how these teachers have been taking some of these kids' clothes home and washing it for them. It broke my heart, and I thought, why isn't everybody talking about this? I mean, I'm happy to see the donations, but there's a bigger story here.
Absolutely. When you talk about inequality, and it rears its head in that kind of way when things that we take for granted and don't even think about are happening less than 10 miles from where you live.
I mean, I've covered stories on the public schools when you hear the kids are saying, look, I mean, the other kids are talking about having computers, and, you know, we're lucky if we've got a pencil and a pad. We're carrying our toilet paper to school. I mean, there's things like that, and people forget about that, but that's the reality that so many of these kids go through.
Yeah, I've been in schools for stories, and there's no air conditioning, and, you know, maybe half the rooms have it and half don't.
Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We'll come back, talk about what story took us down the rabbit hole and which story is going to be remembered from this week. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio. We're getting to the rabbit hole stories. One of the underreported stories we had is, I mentioned the carryout today. Glenn Seelig, longtime publicist in Chicago, was one of the Americans killed in Kabul when the radical, I guess, would you say, terrorists, right? Afghani terrorists.
Taliban
came in and killed 22 people in a siege on a hotel there. Glenn Seelig was one, a longtime Chicago publicist that you worked with, Jeff.
Well, right, through the Blagojevich matter. I mean, a lot of us did. I think that's maybe what he was known for most around here. But, Yeah, just that was shocking news this week, and it's hard to tell if it just was underreported because it's a bigger deal maybe in media circles than in other places, but that was kind of a stunner this week.
Chicago in there. All right, let's talk about the rabbit hole stories. Why don't we start with yours, Jeff? I did not see the story, but I always love when you bring the rabbit hole stories. This is interesting. What do you got here?
This is a weird one, and it's, you know, it's kind of because it's a little bit personal for me, because let me start at the beginning. I'm sort of an amateur meteorologist. I love the weather. Always been interested in it.
I didn't know that.
So I had watched this show in the early 2000s, the Storm Chaser show with Reed Timmer. And Joel Taylor was always his driver. They're ripping around the country roads, sort of like, you know, the movie Twister would be, that kind of thing. So early in the week, it comes out that Joel Taylor, his longtime driver guy, has died. And I think he was 38 or something. But there's no detail about how he died. Well, it turns out that he suffered an overdose, possibly of a party drug, on a giant cruise ship that I was personally on last year on a cruise. It's one of the biggest cruise ships in the world. I've only been on one cruise. That's another story. So he's on a, it's a gay party cruise. It's a company that throws these parties for just like exclusively gay clientele. And it's a gigantic party. And
they charter the whole boat.
They charter the entire boat. So I have, you know, a couple of people who are close to me who are on this boat currently with this cruise. And I'm, so it comes out first that Joel Taylor died on a cruise. And I kind of put two and two together and actually text these people. And they said, yeah, actually somebody did die. And it's a huge deal. And it's really hush hush. And there's talk about drug sweeps and everything. And so the boat stops in Puerto Rico and Joel Taylor's body is taken off the boat. His family has to fly there to ID it. Now the FBI is involved.
Wow.
There's supposed to be zero tolerance for drugs on this boat. Yet it sounds like it was kind of just a fiasco with drugs everywhere. And I was reading everything I could get my hands on.
I didn't know that existed. I need to look more into that. It's interesting.
It's a thing.
I would imagine drug overdose in those situations is going to attract a lot of attention.
This may be the very last one, though. Who knows?
My rabbit hole story is solar tariffs. I got into that. It's interesting because my wife at one point worked in solar energy, and I feel like I kind of know the nuts and bolts of it. I know that there has been a long time... unfairness, really, that Chinese solar energy companies can make the panels a lot cheaper than American companies. And the president is trying to level the playing field that everybody is going to, and he did it with washing machines as well, that by putting a 30% tariff, now you'll use U.S. solar panels or U.S. washing machines and give those companies credit. Reading the National Review, a conservative magazine, they talked about how Which I didn't realize at all, that a lot of times this philosophy has not worked in history. And it's one that doesn't have the affected outcome, which is now everyone's going to buy American. No, what's going to happen is that Samsung and the other companies that are in China and Asia, they're going to jack the prices up. And now we're going, and a lot of times the American companies, because they're trying to make money too, they jack the prices up too. They keep that unlevel. You know, this idea. So the people that lose at the end of the day are not the corporations. They actually make money off the tariffs. Who lose are the U.S. consumers, in the way that we are paying more for the things that we used to pay less.
Well, and this started with the companies. It didn't even start with the president. And so if you want to create, you know, a better advantage for these American companies, and then suddenly you have to lay people off, that's not a win-win advantage. And then, as you mentioned, the whole idea, well, do we get foreign investors then to bring business into
the U.S.? Yeah, do they avoid
the
tariff by Samsung coming to California or coming to Illinois or whatever? But the problem with that is that it rarely happens. And there's something to be said about that there is a system that Samsung has in Tokyo or wherever they're plants are, and it gets upended by moving it to a different country.
I want to say I partly want to believe that the president, because he did this so much in the campaign, Make America Great Again, he's just trying to reinforce that Made in America, you know, invest in America, as opposed to you know, taking from foreign goods,
right?
And if we're gonna buy, you know, from you, you've got to buy from us, and it's got to be an even
but aren't
deal.
We in a position where, I mean, that really sounds 1980s. And the way that the idea of America first or buying American, that we've seen that play out even in the automobile industry, where, let's face it, a lot of the cars that were being made in Asia, Honda, Toyota, places, they were offering cheaper alternatives with better product.
Mm,
and it gave American consumers the opportunity to pay less. And the idea of going to only American companies does, at the end of the day, mean consumers are going to pay more for those kind of goods.
But it's the jobs. It's the whole optics, the whole perception that it's, if it's made in America, and I'm creating jobs. And that's what how he won.
Right.
Part of his campaign was.
It's simple. It's much more complicated than that.
Right.
Because if you do get the jobs and they come in, and let's say they come in at $12 an hour, $15 an hour, even maybe $18 an hour. It's all offset by the idea that you're going to have to pay percentages higher for the goods that are now, that you skewed by putting a tariff on foreign goods. So what essentially at the end of the day, it's an even split, and the people who make the money are not the people who got jobs, the people who own those corporations. That's the issue, that at the end of the day, this is the corporation president.
You pulled Jeff and I down the rabbit hole with you.
I know, right?
We're in there.
This is it.
We're
like
in the bunker.
It's the Econ 504 rabbit hole.
Right.
But I think you're right, too. We were talking. There's a lag time, too, for companies to really react to this. You can't build a factory in Alabama fast enough before you build in the idea that there's going to be an administration change, and then we're going to see the needle swing back the other way. So I think these companies are either willing to wait that out or absorb some of these costs. I mean, I would not underestimate some of these giant companies' ability to absorb that and stay competitive. I just don't see it.
All right, let's move on. And I only have about a minute left here. I may have taken your rabbit hole, Lauren. I apologize.
That's quite all right.
It was Tony Preckwinkle and legalizing pot. We get the next time around, we'll talk 20 minutes about that.
She needs a revenue source, so it's legalizing pot. But at the same time, she's out there talking about the disparity between, she's saying, kids who go at Northwestern or in the suburbs.
Right.
She's talking about white, teenagers, not getting arrested if they're smoking pot, but yet it's different if you're in, an African American community. And so she's bringing that up at the same time. She's like, we need to legalize pot, for revenue. And she's arguing with Alderman Fioretti, or they're in front of the Trib board.
Yeah.
We need to raise taxes, but I don't know which tax because we need revenue.
It is a quandary. She has trying very hard to raise revenue, and in the areas that she's trying, she finds total political pushback.
Tony Taxwinkle needs to go.
Tony Taxwinkle.
Well, if she legalizes pot, nobody's going to remember it in 5 years.
Yeah, right? All right. Which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 50, 500 years from this week? Lauren, you and I have similar ones. USA Gymnastics.
Absolutely.
What happened this week with Larry Nassar?
Yeah, I mean, just the emotion, it's still in my head
and it could
with
be,
the words of those
And it could
girls.
Be next week and the week after and the week after and the week after at this
and,
point.
And who knows how it's going to affect the actual sport, and the teams that we put on.
I got a lot of pushback when I threw out the idea that maybe U.S. Gymnastics need to take a break from the Olympics for a couple of years as punishment. The callers called in very irate, saying don't punish the athletes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I can get that, but there also has to be some accountability from the U.S. Olympic Committee. And I don't just mean USA Gymnastics, but they're going to try to act like we had no idea. But 156 victims makes you go, somebody somewhere knew what was going on. Jeff, you had one that was different. DACA. We didn't even get a chance to talk DACA. You see that being a story we're going to remember.
Sure. And, I mean, it's tied up in the shutdown talks and everything else. But, I mean, that literally affects hundreds of thousands of dreamers and, millions of family members. And whatever the outcome of that is, they will obviously definitely remember it in five or how many years it is. So, for sure.
You guys are amazing. You guys, this is an hour and a half of power radio, and I appreciate you being here. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen.
You launched my singing career, so I just want to thank you for that.
These were also two ensemble members for Children Go Where I Send Thee.
Thankfully, you didn't open with that.
It was live music at its best. You guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.